Far West Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey says it may be time for a coalition ground intervention in Syria. Turkey called Tuesday for a coalition ground operation to end the war in Syria. Foreign Minister Mevlut Kosofoglu said Saudi Arabia and some Western European countries have indicated such an operation is necessary.
Daesh, Türkiye'ye doğrudan tehdit oluşturuyor. Ama sadece Türkiye.
He ruled out the possibility Turkey undertaking unilateral action or the prospect of a joint Saudi-Turkish venture without broader consensus in the 65-member nation U.S.-led coalition fighting Islamic State. His comments come as Russian-backed government forces and Syrian Kurds advanced in northern Syria, bringing them closer to Turkish territory. Meanwhile, UN spokesman Farhan Haq says envoy Stefan de Mistura has reached agreement with Damascus for aid convoys to reach 7 besieged areas in Syria.
Humanitarian agencies and partners are preparing convoys for these areas to depart as soon as possible in the coming days. And as the special envoy pointed out, he said in his remarks to the press in Damascus that the test will be tomorrow.
Hundreds of thousands of Syrians are believed to be trapped in such areas. Uganda's presidential campaign ended Tuesday ahead of Thursday's vote. The longtime opposition leader Kizza Besigye says will be neither free nor fair. Political analyst Nicholas Sengoba says incumbent Yoweri Museveni, in power for 30 years, has many advantages.
When you have somebody who has been in power 30 years like Museveni, almost everybody in the country, you'll find people who are grateful to him for the wealth they've made. In this sort of setup, the president has a very huge hold on public finance, the coercive arms of government, that's the army and the police.
Besigye, who has failed 3 times to unseat Mr. Museveni, is competing with former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi. This is VOA News. President Obama, closing out a 2-day summit of Southeast Asian leaders in California Tuesday, called for tangible steps to lower tensions over ongoing territorial disputes in the South China Sea. He said leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, affirmed that disputes should be resolved peacefully and through legal means.
Freedom of navigation must be upheld and lawful commerce should not be impeded. I reiterated that the United States will continue to fly, sail, and operate wherever international law allows, and we will support the right of all countries to do the same.
Without specifically mentioning China, Mr. Obama called for a halt to further land reclamation, a reference to Beijing's massive effort to assert its claims over disputed territory through new construction and island building. The meeting came as Fox News reports that China has deployed advanced surface-to-air missiles on Woody Island, one of the contested islands in the Paracel Island chain in the South China Sea. A 1-day general strike in Democratic Republic of Congo shut down most businesses in the capital Kinshasa Tuesday as the opposition sought to pressure President Joseph Kabila to step down and not contest elections expected sometime later this year. Mr. Kabila has been in power since 2001 and is currently barred by the Constitution from seeking another term. Even some government offices reportedly operated only half strength. The government did not sanction any protests. The World Health Organization Tuesday said countries dealing with the Zika virus outbreak should consider controversial methods to fight its spread, including the use of genetically modified mosquitoes, releasing altered male mosquitoes to mate with females whose babies die in the larvae stage has been used successfully in the Cayman Islands and Panama. Meanwhile, U.S. authorities are recommending blood no longer be accepted from regions where the Zika virus is active. U.S. authorities say donors who may have been exposed to the virus should not give blood for at least 4 weeks. There is currently no treatment for Zika, and much remains unknown about the disease. Experts say Zika could cause microcephaly, a condition in which babies are born with unusually small heads because the brain has not developed properly or stopped growing. The Zika virus is becoming a major problem across Latin America, particularly in Brazil, which has reported more than 4,300 suspected cases of microcephaly. A notable international humanitarian organization has urged European leaders to keep borders open for migrants, adding that measures to seal off the continent are inhumane. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies warned Tuesday against building fences in Europe to stem the flow of asylum seekers. Meanwhile, senior European Union officials are expressing their commitment to keep Britain in the bloc. Before a 2-day summit opens Thursday, British Prime Minister Cameron won a commitment from European Parliament President Martin Schulz. Legislative body will do its utmost to back any fair deal on the EU reforms Mr. Cameron's seeking. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Wednesday, February 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's Prime Minister urges voters to turn out tomorrow in droves to vote for their candidates of their choice without fear of intimidation.
The government and its agencies are ready to ensure that peace is kept and the people vote without fear, without intimidation, and select candidates of their choice.
Ruhakana Rugunda is Uganda's prime minister. The African Union says Central African Republic elections were peaceful and transparent. And Zimbabwe's former vice president, Joyce Mujuru, says those coming to join her new political party must meet certain criteria.
What we expect them to do is to, first of all, reconcile with their own people at grassroots level. We don't accept somebody from the top.
Opposition and civil society groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo say their two-day stay-at-home strike was a huge success. And Malawi's prison band loses the Grammy, but maintains hope. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's Prime Minister Ruhakana Rugunda has assured Ugandans that Thursday's presidential and parliamentary elections will be peaceful. He urged all registered Ugandans to turn out in droves to vote for the candidates of their choice without fear of intimidation. The reassurances come as reports say many Ugandans are fearful the elections could turn violent. This after Ugandan police Tuesday blocked main opposition candidate Dr. Chisa Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change and his supporters from accessing parts of Kampala City to hold their party's final rally before Thursday's vote. Prime Minister Rugunda described the incident as unfortunate but says Dr. Besigye and his supporters were not supposed to campaign through the central business district of the capital.
The elections in Uganda are very competitive. The campaigns have been going on at least for the last 3 months. They have been basically peaceful, and elections tomorrow will be peaceful. The government and its agencies are ready to ensure that peace is kept and people vote without fear, without intimidation, and select candidates of their choice. And therefore, there is no cause for alarm. I, of course, encourage, and the government encourages, all the registered voters to turn out the big numbers to ensure that they vote for candidates of their own choice, for parties of their own choice.
What do you make of the incident Tuesday that opposition leader Dr. Chisa Besigye was not able to hold his rally because police prevented his supporters from rallying in the capital, Kampala?
There is no truth in that. Besigye was going to the same district, which was not part of the program and the route that he was supposed to have or take. And police said, no, you cannot come in the central business district because this will disturb the active business environment. Continue to take the route that you and the police authorities have agreed on. So that was the incident. It's regretted, but came as a result of insistence on passing through a route that was not on schedule, not in the plan, and not agreed upon with the police personnel.
I've read accounts in the Ugandan papers saying that the police, while insisting that the opposition cannot hold rallies late, President Museveni has been able to do that, and the police has not stopped him.
The police have been, in my view, implementing the law. Well, there has been occasional areas of flexibility depending on how the environment is, the possibilities of insecurity, the possibilities of violence. So the police officers who are in charge may sometimes allow some clinics to let candidates conclude their meetings, their speeches, But all in all, respect for time and the regulations about elections is indeed what has been followed by the candidates.
Ruhakana Rugunda is Uganda's prime minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. African Union election observers in the Central African Republic said the two polls held in the country on Sunday were conducted peacefully and transparently. Some provisional results of the presidential election in the capital have been released, and so far they show Faustin Touadéra in the lead. Nick Long reports from Bangui.
The African Union has a full-scale election observer mission in CAR led by the former Prime Minister of Senegal, Souleymane Ndene Ndiaye. Ndiaye told reporters here Tuesday that his teams visited most of the polling stations in Bangui and some others outside the capital, a total of more than 120 polling stations in all. An earlier attempt to hold the first round of legislative elections in late December was a failure. The poll was so flawed that the Constitutional Court annulled the results, although it confirmed the first round results of the presidential poll. This time, both polls seem to have passed off acceptably, according to the AU observers.
L'élection s'est déroulée dans une atmosphère de paix et de quiétude.
Ndiaye says the mission's preliminary finding is that the elections were held in a peaceful and quiet atmosphere at the places where the mission was present. Generally, he says the vote was held in accordance with the required procedure and the electoral law. He noted that the turnout was lower than in the first round of the presidential poll. According to the CAR's National Election Authority, the turnout might have been as high as 63%. Ndiaye did not comment on that estimate. Other observers here think it was lower. The main problem seemed to be lack of voting materials at some centres, but this was less serious than the first round where there was a shortfall of several hundred thousand ballot papers. But on the whole, the AU mission has given these polls its seal of approval.
Les membres des bureaux de vote, beaucoup d'entre eux ne savaient pas.
Certainly there were logistical and organisational difficulties, but these did not prevent Central Africans from voting, says Ndiaye. The mission notes that the difficulties involved in holding these polls were not such as to cast doubt on their credibility. The National Election Authority began releasing provisional results of the presidential poll Tuesday. An official read out results polling station by polling station.
Au bureau de vote numéro 2 de l'école Bonberger, dans le 3e arrondissement.
He read results from about 60% of polling stations in the capital Bangui and in the surrounding prefecture Ombela Mpoko. These provisional results show former Prime Minister Faustin Archange Touadéra clearly in the lead. The election authority did not give a roundup of total votes, but Touadéra beat his opponent, also a former Prime Minister, Anissé Georges Dolegele, by a big margin in a large majority of constituencies announced. The election authority said it is giving out these partial results now to avoid unfounded claims by political parties. Dolegele may have polled better in the rest of the country. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
Opposition and civil society groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo say their two-day stay-at-home strike was a huge success. The strike was called to pressure President Joseph Kabila to respect the constitution and avoid seeking re-election as a means to stay in power. Martin Fayulu, leader of the opposition Commitment for Citizenship and Development in the DRC, says almost the whole country was paralyzed as millions of Congolese heeded the call to stay at home.
All of them went, they went. Congo, Kinshasa, Makadi, Goma, Bukavu, many towns were completely paralyzed. People didn't go to work, and the students stayed at home. And it's a big success. That means that the people of Congo have shown to Mr. Kabila that they want him to go.
You said that the people of Congo want President Kabila to go, but President Kabila has not said that he wants to stand for re-election.
Yeah, but he hasn't said that he will not change the constitution, he will not run again, but his behavior is showing that he wants to cling on power. He has appointed the people in the Electoral Commission, those people are working for him, are working to delay the election. We all know that the election should take place this year, that is November. But the Electoral Commission is saying that we cannot have the election this year because the time frame they have, they are not capable to do that work. But what we are saying, we all know also that they can do if they want, but they are trying to delay the election.
The last time you had a rally such as this last year, the police turned out in large numbers and there was violence. People were killed. What do you think the way the police behaved towards you on Tuesday and on Monday? Was there any violence?
No. The last time, January last year, we had the people killed because the military and the policemen shoot people. But today, we told our people to stay at home. And we told the people not to have violence. We told people not to go to work and to stay at home or to go around where you live. And everything went smoothly.
Martin Fayulu is the leader of the Opposition Commitment for Citizenship and Development in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Today is Wednesday, February 17th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Still to come, Marco Uma sports in our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day. I'm James Butte. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The leader of the Zimbabwe People First Party, former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, says members of the opposition are coming to her party in droves, though she does not rule out a coalition with other opposition parties to challenge President Robert Mugabe. Mrs. Mujuru says ever since she was expelled from the ruling ZANU-PF and fired from her post as vice president, she has managed to understand the plight of Zimbabweans better. She spoke with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe program about whether she is prepared to work with her embattled vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa.
What we expect them to do is to, first of all, reconcile with their own people at grassroots level from where they come from. Our approach in People First is that we don't accept somebody from the top. Anybody who comes to work at national level has to be approved from the ward level, from his own home area. If you are not approved, if you don't come through the ranks, if you don't reconcile with your people, then we cannot. That's the approach, and that's the place we are promoting. What the problem is, there are people who have been finding it very easy to just go back home, impose themselves on the people, and then come back at national level and start doing things that don't go well with what is expected. So it's People First, we say to ourselves, no. Let's listen to what the people say. And as National Democrats and as People First, we want to listen to what the majority of people want things done. And with that, we are going to practice that. Nobody who is coming to People First come with their baggage. Whether you have been holding the highest post wherever you're coming from, in People First, we don't recognize that. You are coming as a person and you start from zero.
And let's talk about working with other opposition parties. Have you engaged anyone, or are you also willing to engage them?
Anybody willing to work with People First, we are ready. But my comrades in People First, those who have come from their parties, are asking. Because we are saying, you come as individuals, and these have come in their large numbers as individuals. And they're asking questions. Amenujuru, we have decided to come and start this new outfit. Why is it that people are still talking about coalition? Coalition means these outfits still have numbers. Why? And I'm saying, no. You should know that we are National Democrats. So any democratic outfit, we will work with, because we are not a fighting lot. We are a uniting lot.
That was former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, interim leader of the opposition Zimbabwe People First Party. She was speaking from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe program. A Malawian prison band whose album was nominated in the Best World Music category for the 2016 Grammys did not win the award, but the group is hopeful it can make another run at a Grammy in the future. Lamek Masina met with the band members on Tuesday at Malawi's Maximum Security Zuma Central Prison and filed this report.
The prison reform band was created in 2008, largely to entertain inmates at Zomba Maximum Security Prison. This was in addition to the Malawi Prison Brass Band. Acting Chief Commissioner of Prisons, Litu Dinizulu Ntengano, says the band came into being when he bumped into a group of musical young prisoners.
When I visited the Zomba Central Prison, I saw some boys playing local-made guitars from empty gallons, and they could play music. And once they started playing music, there was an attraction of prisoners coming out from their cells to listen to this music. And I said, no, let us improve this.
He proposed funding from the National AIDS Commission for the musicians to start composing songs about HIV/AIDS awareness messages.
They gave us 500,000. We bought 3 electrical guitars, a set of drums, and a very small speakers. Oh, the guys were very happy. And we started composing HIV/AIDS related awareness campaign music inside the prisons.
This led to authorities giving the band additional funds to buy more musical instruments. A prison officer, Aline Sikawunde, is the deputy leader of the band. She says the Grammy nomination was a surprise to everyone at the prison. She says the band was surprised when an American man came to record their music and they were suspicious of his motive. Band member Ernest Kufandiko was sentenced in 2009 for theft. He said the nomination confirms that a prison is a reformatory center and not a dumping ground.
He
says the general public should not expect the band members will be leading their previous lifestyle when released. What they should know is that the convicts have learned skills that once released, they will know that these young men have indeed changed. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Zomba, Malawi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Hosts Cameroon beat Egypt in sets of 25-14, 25-27, 25-21, 23-25, and 15-7 to emerge winners at the Africa Women's Volleyball Olympic qualifiers in Yaoundé on Tuesday. Earlier on, Kenya dismissed Algeria in straight sets in the bronze medal playoff. Botswana were placed 5th, Tunisia 6th, and Uganda 7th. Consequently, Cameroon have qualified for the women's volleyball contest at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Egypt and Kenya get another chance to qualify for the Olympics during an intercontinental qualifier. In Tunisia, 20 teams go into action at the Arab Men's Club Volleyball Championship starting in Sousse today, Wednesday. Turning to football, draws for the 2016 Futsal Africa Cup of Nations take place in Johannesburg, South Africa today, Wednesday. Angola, Egypt, Libya, Morocco, Mozambique, Tunisia, Zambia, and hosts South Africa qualified for the draw. In Morocco, Frenchman Javi Renard is the new coach of the Morocco national team, the Atlas Lions. The Royal Morocco Football Federation disclosed in Casablanca on Tuesday. He replaces Moroccan Badou Zaki on a 3-year contract. Renard guided Zambia and reigning African African champions Ivory Coast to victory in the Orange Africa Cup of Nations. His immediate task is to prepare the Atlas Lions for their acid test against Cape Verde Islands in the qualifiers for the 2017 Nations Cup next month. Meanwhile, the Algerian Olympic football team host their Palestinian peers in a friendly match in the capital Algiers today, Wednesday, the Algeria Football Federation disclosed. In Switzerland, former FIFA Secretary General Jerome Vargs is banned from all football activities, the FIFA Ethics Committee disclosed in Zurich. According to FIFA, Vargs is sanctioned for inappropriate conduct regarding World Cup ticket sales and for the abuse of the FIFA travel expenses system and destroying the evidence. Finally, in swimming, Egypt beat South Africa 15-11 in the final encounter during the Africa qualifiers for the FINA World Youth Water Polo Championships in Harare, Zimbabwe. South Africa placed second ahead of Zimbabwe. Egypt will represent Africa at the global contest due in Budva, Montenegro in August. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts and Trivia question for today, February 17th. On this day in 1942, Huey Newton was born. He co-founded the Black Panther Party in Oakland, California. Newton called on blacks to arm themselves against white racism and oppression. Also on this day in 1902, singer Miriam Anderson was born in Philadelphia. Her dream was to sing with the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. But like every black person in those days, Miriam was discriminated against because of the color of her skin. In 1939, Miriam was to sing at Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C., but she was refused permission because she was black. Eleanor Roosevelt, the wife of President Franklin Roosevelt, said Miriam could sing in front of the Lincoln Memorial. On this day in 1963, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, the greatest basketball player of all time, was born in New York City. Jordan was one of the most effectively marketed athletes of his generation and was instrumental in popularizing the NBA around the world in the 1980s and 1990s. He holds the NBA record for highest career regular season scoring average with 30.12 points per game, as well as averaging a record of 33.4 points per game in the NBA playoffs. And on this day in 1891, African-American inventor A.C. Richardson invented the wooden churn, a device that made it easier to convert cream into butter and forever changed the food industry. He was a prolific visionary who invented numerous devices, including an insect destroyer. And on this day in African history, in 1982, Robert Gabriel Mugabe, the Prime Minister of Zimbabwe then, dismissed coalition partner Joshua Nkomo from the cabinet. This follows the discovery of arms caches on farms owned by Nkomo, who had been accused by Mugabe of plotting a coup. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 17th. Congratulations to Adi Kali Suma of Conakry, Guinea, Gilbert Otiano of Nairobi, Kenya, and Obe Goteng of Bukuru, Jos, South Plateau State, Nigeria. You are the winners of our February 16th question, who was the first African-American Supreme Court Justice? The answer, Thurgood Marshall. Now, here is our question for today, February 17th. Which African-American singer is considered the Empress of the Blues? Once again, which African-American singer is considered the Empress of the Blues? Send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And that's it for this Wednesday, February 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as Post Editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Nick Abinov, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss the Uganda presidential elections with Shaka Sali in Uganda and me, Esther Gidu Yort, as the studio guest host. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.